This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Have you or someone you know developed slurred speech or voice changes? How about eating or drinking difficulties? Or is this something you might be worried about in the future? Then make sure you keep on listening to find out more. Kia ora and welcome to the show. My name is Katie Burns. I'm the Community Connector for MS Otago and you're listening to our podcast, MS Momentum, a monthly podcast on Otago Access Radio where I interview people about all things related to living with multiple sclerosis in the Otago region. Today I'm talking about speech and swallowing difficulties, and to explore this important topic, I'm speaking with Kim Churton, a speech and language therapist with over 10 years of experience in New Zealand and the UK. Kim currently works for On The Go Physio in the Canterbury region, specialising in working with people with neurological conditions. Kim is also a trained yoga and Pilates instructor and has a strong passion for connecting the brain and the body. Welcome, Kim. Thank you for joining me on the show today. Really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie. It's a real pleasure to be here to speak with you today.
Thank you. So just to get us all orientated to you, would you mind telling us a bit more about your background and your role and how all those things kind of came about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll take you right back. I trained as a speech and language therapist here. I'm based in Canterbury, and that's where I did my training a bit over 20 years ago now. And I always knew that I wanted to work with adults. And my first job was up in Tauranga Hospital in the Bay of Plenty. I spent a few years there working with adults, both within the hospital and in the community. And most of the work was with adults with neurological conditions. So a small amount of that was MS. And we'll come back to that later when I say a small amount, because I think sometimes the work we do with MS doesn't really represent the need or the amount of people that might be experiencing difficulties, but we'll put that on hold and come back to that a bit later. I had a bit of time in the beautiful Bay of Plenty. The other types of neurological conditions I'd work with would be acquired neurological conditions like stroke or traumatic brain injury, and then other progressive neurological conditions. So there might be Parkinson's, MS, motor neuron disease, that sort of thing, anything that could affect people's speech, voice, language, or swallowing. Spent a bit of time up there and then went to London for 5 years. My husband and I were based there when we did our OE, and that was a pretty neat time. Working as a locum, I got to work in lots of different settings, also working with adults, so acute hospital settings, rehab clinics, community settings, and once again, mainly all with adults with neurological conditions. Loved the work, and then we came back to New Zealand and the timing suited for us to start our family. So I've got two children now who and now age 12 and 14, but obviously I came back to New Zealand. I was pregnant and ready to start a family, and the next sort of phase of life actually took quite a big sidestep. So when the kids were young, I just wanted to do something a little bit fun that fitted in with my role as a mum. And so I actually started teaching group fitness classes for a while, and that evolved into me eventually becoming trained as a Pilates and yoga instructor, something I never expected I would be doing. I never feel like I'm the one that likes to really stand up in front of groups, but that seems to be what I end up doing a lot of these days. And I think it always ties in with I love the idea of connecting the body and the brain, and we know that exercise is so good, not just physically but mentally as well. And so I did that for a bit of fun. It turned into More of a job than I expected. Now, still takes up quite a lot of my time. And then my other little detour, which was for about 7 years, as I took on a role for the Department of Corrections here in Canterbury. So I worked within the men's prison and the women's prison and ran health and wellbeing programs here in Canterbury for about 7 years. So that was a combination of education and movement around wellbeing, quite holistic wellbeing. Then we're getting a little bit back into the last few years where things have all sort of merged together. I've come back into my speech and language therapy work, back with neurological conditions, but using a little bit of the experience I've had within the movement and exercise space, I've seen a real need to combine both of them together. So I still do clinic work, just one-on-one, specifically for speech and language therapists, but I also do a lot of group work where we combine movement, brain gym, stretching, mindfulness, voice, singing, communication to try and stimulate the brain in lots of different ways to focus on overall well-being. And I really, really love that as well. So yeah, things have kind of gone in different directions and they feel like they've kind of all ended up kind of connecting back together or weaving back together, which is quite cool.
Isn't it funny, the little side path that life takes us on sometimes that we don't see coming?
We just don't at all. And I think you never know the doors that sometimes open and the doors that sometimes close. And I think if we're a little bit brave and courageous at times, then some of those doors can lead to pretty exciting places.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the way you've kind of taken all those experiences and, like, say, like, woven them into one where, like, it's all these different things all coming together to create better outcomes for the community. Because I feel like when programs incorporate different things, they work so much better. If you can tick, you know, there's the five ways to good well-being. If you can tick as many of those boxes off as you can, you know, if you can make it social and make it fun and make it exercise and make it connecting with other people, it's just so much better for everyone really involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we often know these things. It's not that we sort of don't know what's good for us, but I think we can get caught up in our day-to-day ticking boxes, getting through things. And you can go for a long period of time. And just like, as you said, with those five ways to well-being, you can kind of go a long time and then go, actually, there's been one of these that's really been missing for a long time. And sometimes you do need that sort of external person to kind of ask the questions or show you that's a great model that you've talked about, show you those little flyers they put out and go, actually, am I putting a little bit of care and attention into these areas? Does this give me some degree of balance that will obviously support my well-being holistically? And yeah, as you were saying that, I was also just thinking, and sometimes it's just these little moments that you encounter that can really change the trajectory of where you head. I remember when, and I still teach Pilates classes where I'm based here in West Melton, and one of my participants developed a neurological condition, which meant it was really hard for her to participate in, I suppose, our normal class. And that really was that moment that got me thinking, actually, what is really available for people when they can't just go to the gym, they can't go to their normal community centre. I think we are now providing more and more adapted classes. And I'm part of a community here in Canterbury where I know lots of different people who provide classes which are maybe either seated or supported. But yeah, throughout the country, sometimes that's hard to access. And, you know, this one person was sort of the catalyst in me going, actually, I need to now offer something for people who, need something a little bit more supportive. And then go, well, actually, what else can we do can we stimulate the brain here? Can we, sometimes we sing songs, can we use music a little bit more to bring fun and a sense of rhythm? We use rhythm. Rhythm's really useful in a lot of the therapies we do. And what other things can, just fire up some of those new neural connections as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is often about just doing things differently. And I think that can be the real difficult part, is that if you've done one thing a certain way for a long time, it can be, when things change, sometimes it can just be a matter of people going, well, I just can't do that anymore. And really it's about changing things into, okay, so how can we adapt things so that you can still do that thing? It just might look a bit different to how it has before. I think that's really, really important, hey? Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think one other thing that is so important, particularly, you know, as we get older or if we develop a neurological condition, is maintaining our social connections. And a lot of, you know, the groups we attend, whether it's exercise or whether it's playing golf or going to, you know, whether people are dancing or doing whatever, if they physically find that's difficult and then stop attending, then they lose that opportunity to connect with those people, and that's an opportunity to communicate and an opportunity to maintain relationships. And we know a lot more about the importance now of relationships, not only just because it's nice to have friendships and it makes you feel good, but it's actually really, really important for our health long term. You might have come across in your time that there's that study, that the happiness study, and pretty much strong relationships are really, really preventative in terms of our long-term health, and we live longer if we have strong relationships. So it's important to not let barriers get in the way of maintaining those social connections.
Yeah, absolutely. People need people. We're hardwired for connection.
Absolutely do.
Absolutely.
even the introverts amongst us need people.
Yes, I am very much a self-confessed introvert, but yes, we still need people.
Yeah, same. And it's funny, and I think it's funny how sometimes I'm the same. I'm actually quite introverted, but I find myself on a daily basis getting up in front of groups of people. So sometimes, sometimes the skills that we, or the personality traits we think we have that are destined for a certain role, sometimes unbeknown to us, it draws us in a different direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've worked with neurological conditions for a while and a little bit within MS, but and then a lot of other, there's lots and lots of neurological conditions out there, because I know here in Otago we work with MS, but we also work with other conditions. We have a lot of really rare neurological conditions that affect the body in all sorts of different ways. But if people were perhaps experiencing a change, What sort of typical changes might you see in terms of a person with MS, or just a person with a neurological condition in relation to speech or swallowing?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So as we know with, and I'll talk about MS specifically, at least initially, we know that it can affect any part of the central nervous system, the brain and the spinal cord. So to speak, to use language, to initiate our voice, and to eat and drink uses lots of different parts of our brain. So depending on where some of that damage or those lesions may occur, may look really, really different. So MS is particularly a condition where it's not typical in terms of what that presentation might be, and the journey is not a typical journey. Things can change. You know, we can get the relapsing and remitting forms where there might be really challenging times, and then some of those symptoms might become quite mild. But some of the things that we do typically see is, and I'll explain some of the terminology that people might hear bended around a little bit, is so dysarthria, which describes sort of a slurred type of speech, can occur in around up to 50% or more people. So at least some of the studies have shown that, you know, about 50% of people with MS may experience dysarthria or slurred speech at some stage. And this is when the muscles become weak through the process of changes in the brain and how those signals are being sent to the muscles. So that might be muscles of our lips and our tongue to try and get those speech sounds nice and crisp and clear. We might see also changes in the voice. So the whole process of speech starts at with our breath. We need something to power our voice. So we need to use the muscles around our chest and our diaphragm to fill our lungs up with air, and the ears then can come up and create voice at the level of our larynx. So it'll get our vocal cords vibrating together. So neurological changes can affect the breathing. It can affect how the vocal cords move. So we may get potentially a weak voice. We may get a breathy voice. Sometimes we may get a strained voice if those muscles are holding too much tension in them. So there's the voice here. And then obviously whatever that voice is created is then sort of shaped by the muscles and our articulators, once again, as I said, with our tongue and our lips to produce the sound. So that's sort of what we hear, the sound that comes out. And as I said, yeah, dysarthria can be quite common. But connected to that is our language. So a different part of the brain is where we think of the meaning behind what we want to say, and we try and find words to put into a sentence to convey a message to someone else. So this part of our brain, which is found in our frontal lobe, often in an area called Broca's area, is where we kind of retrieve words from. So if there's lesions or damage to that area, we may have word-finding difficulties. We may have just trouble kind of putting a sentence together, putting the words in the right order. So that might affect the fluency of our speech. And at the same time as with language, which is kind of expressing ideas, MS can sometimes often affect how we're listening and understanding spoken language. So this is called receptive language. So the parts of our brain which listen and hear and make sense of words that other people are saying, and then interpreting the meaning behind that, can also be affected. So someone might have difficulty maybe following a conversation at the normal speed. They might miss parts. And because memory potentially might be affected as well, someone might have difficulties remembering something that has been said to them. But these are all lots of different things that may or may not become problems. And as I said, everyone's very different in what they might experience. So as a speech and language therapist, when we get the opportunity to work with an individual, we will look at all these different areas, the whole process of communication, which is our sort of broad umbrella term. And then within it, we've got, yeah, as I said, the breath and the voice, the speech, the language, the expressive language, and the receptive language as well. And then the other kind of slightly abstract part, the extra layer that can come into that is cognitive language difficulties. And that's sort of very much in the frontal lobe of our brain, and that affects things like high-level language functioning, decision-making, all those kind of more tricky elements of language that may also be impacted if there's a little bit more frontal lobe involvement.
It's what I find really fascinating about this. It's so much more complex than I thought, and I think a lot of people think. You know, a speech is quite often seen as this like almost automatic like thing that we just do every day, and and I do see a lot of that, like when I'm working out in the community, either the issues with like the physicality of speech, but also a lot of that kind of processing, cognition, like that kind of stuff. And I think, I know you mentioned kind of at the start of the show, that's much more common than I think people are really aware of, or sometimes even that the medical profession is really aware of. And I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. I see it all the time. But it's very interesting how, it's so complex. It's really
complex. And I think I mentioned this when we met last time at the Community Advisors Conference, that we do take it for granted, our ability to communicate. We do it without even thinking. I mean, even in this conversation, you're asking me a question, and the speed at which I need to process that and then formulate a response and then make the muscles work to create speech, everything's happening so quickly. And the timing of that has to happen simultaneously, the thoughts with the words, with the sounds. And sometimes I like to think about it, MS, or the neurology of multiple sclerosis, you know, and our normal pathways that are functioning really well. It's like we've got these lovely highways of messages, you know, just as if we were zooming down the highway. There's no traffic lights, no side roads. We don't have to stop. We get to that destination really quickly, and the destination is, you know, saying what the message is that we want to say. But when that sort of highway sort of starts breaking down with that demyelination, it's kind of like our highway turns into like a back shingle road a little bit with less signposting. And so, the message that we're trying to get from A to B, which would generally be fine, it's got a few bumps along the way, and maybe things get lost because they take a little side robe, or the signposting isn't great to get to the destination. And the other element you can think about it is like, imagine like a convoy of vehicles heading down this sort of bumpy road. And those vehicles represent all the different elements of communication, the breath and the voice and the articulation and the ideas. And we want all those vehicles to get to the destination at the same time so that we can express this message clearly and concisely. But actually, you know, the vehicle that was doing the breathing, it kind of got lost, so the breath's not quite as coordinated, or the vehicle that's trying to retrieve the correct word, that's taken a little detour and had a few bumps. And so the end result is little subtle changes when not everything's arriving at the exact right time to express ourselves concisely and clearly and with a strong voice and with the right ideas. And you can see how if that starts becoming difficult, why people will start to withdraw from conversations, from social events, because it would become really, really hard work. And this is the difficulty we get, is the impact that communications can have on people's relationships, people's community, people's connections. And then if they're not communicating as often, and we're not reinforcing those neural pathways or encouraging neuroplasticity to form new neural pathways, if there's some roadblocks there which are a little bit more permanent, then it can progress and we can lose that those functions a little bit faster than if we were really trying to maintain the same amount of communication opportunities in our life.
Absolutely. We are unfortunately out of time. The show always goes much faster than I think it will.
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, we feel like we're kind of just getting started.
I know. So what we might do is we might get you back on so we can chat a little bit more. It's been really, really great to chat with you. And we haven't even approached swallowing or anything that yet.
Yeah.
So,
which is a very cool topic. And I'd love to chat to you again about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like very complex and very, very interesting. All the rabbit holes we can go down, I'm sure.
Yeah, but can I just say, because I know we're out of time, the one message that I just did want to really make clear today is if you are having some difficulty with speech or swallowing, do ask to get a referral to a speech and language therapist, because we're not getting the referrals to the degree to which I think people are experiencing problems. Mm-hmm. And we can really help and support people in the early days to maintain those functions.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
As long as, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I keep recommending to people as well, because I mean, it's a public system and therefore the list is quite long, and so the earlier people can get onto the list, the better, because they will probably be waiting some time to see someone as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
Yes, we will definitely get you back on, Kim. But thank you for chatting with me today. And, yeah, we'll get you back on hopefully the next show.
Thanks, Katie. It was lovely chatting to you as well.
You've been listening to MS Momentum, brought to you on the third Wednesday of the month by me, Katie Burns, Community Connector for MS Otago. You can listen again to this episode and find other podcasts from this series at oar.org.nz and on your favourite podcast platforms. To contact MS Otago, you can email info@msotago.org.nz or call us on 027 889 9035. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.